welcome to another episode of Podcasts on Fifth Ave. I'm Taylor Haas. You're Danny Shirey. We're on our second episode of the off season now. It's pretty bleak as far as topics go, but we do have a lot to talk about. Off season decisions coming ahead. We first wanted to start off with looking at the UFA market. I mean, before I get into this, it's kind of hard to really look at some of these guys because we don't know what kind of cap space the Penguins are going to have. We don't know what's going to happen with Jari. We don't know what's going to happen to Jason Zucker. Those are really the two big ones. They have a couple other UFA decisions, but I mean, that's going to dictate really anything we talk about here.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing is too, is like, they have nobody running the train in the office right now. So it's like, oh, like I keep getting questions like, oh, are the Penguins going to re-sign Zucker? Like, oh, do they want to bring Jari back? And it's like, well, I would love to try and answer that question for you, but I legitimately don't know because there's nobody running. Like, yes, there's somebody running the team right now, but they do not have a GM right now. So all efforts, I'm sure, you know, some of the guys in that are still a part of the hockey ops department right now are obviously having those conversations and looking into those things. But obviously, they know that that's not going to be their call anyway. So it's really hard to sit here and be like, oh, yeah, well, they'd love to have Zucker back at the right price or whatever. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. We've mentioned it on the last episode. They have like a team of like the remaining hockey ops staff kind of just managing the day-to-day operations. It's Alex Shaw, the director of hockey ops. He's the salary cap guy. Eric Heasley, Wilkes-Barre's GM. Andy Socher, hockey operations analyst, used to be the video coach. And then Mike Sullivan helping. There's not a whole lot that needs to be done. I don't know what kind of power they actually have. They definitely don't have the power to be signing like Jason Zucker to a long-term deal. If it's something like re-signing Philip Hallander to like a, you know, 1 year deal, then maybe. But anyway, moving on, look at the UFA market. To start off, because we were just talking about Jari, the goalie market is, Jari's probably the number one guy out there.
Yeah, the only other guy, like, aside from Freddie Anderson, is Freddie Anderson. Yeah. Yeah, but then you look and it's like, well, Anderson's kind of literally just like an older version of Jari. Like his performance is kind of like up and down. You got to worry about him like kind of shining through at those key times. But also, he, over the past couple seasons, he's dealt with his fair share of injuries as well. So you look and it's like, okay, maybe you could get by just saying, oh, well, we didn't bring Jari back. But then you really look at like actually what the two goalies are. They're very, very similar in my eyes.
Yeah, it's a lot of older guys like Jonathan Quick. If they're going to get a goalie who's not Jari for next season, it's not going to be via the UFA market. Going to be someone like a Rusei Saros or John Gibson. Or I know you're talking about Jeremy Swayman as an option, but skaters. There's actual skaters to talk about.
Yeah, so the skater market is not great either. There are some interesting names out there, and I do agree that like the Penguins' first order of business once they have a general manager, like they got to figure out what's happening in goal, whether it is bringing Jari back or going out and acquiring a Saros or a Swayman or a Gibson or whoever it may be. But I think that that's got to be priority number one, so that, like you said earlier in the show, so that they know what kind of money that they're going to have to work with throughout the rest of their lineup, and mainly to address some glaring holes in their depth, right? But one of those holes that I see right now is they've got to find a left-handed, preferably top pairing guy that can either play with Chris Letang or Jeff Petrie. And you'd like that to be maybe a bit of a more defensive kind of guy like Brian Dumoulin from several seasons ago. But if they're going to be playing that high in the lineup, I don't necessarily think that they should be targeting somebody who is like a Jan Ruda, for instance, that like their calling card is their defense. They're going to want somebody who can move the puck a little bit and maybe contribute. And I haven't given it a whole ton of thought, but I'm looking at a name like Dmitry Orlov, and I know he's a little bit older, but I think he can still really play. I've loved his game since the Bruins acquired him. And yes, the Penguins need to get younger. I'm not advocating for bringing in a bunch more older guys just for the sake of it. But if we're realistically looking at their window here and saying, okay, it's probably just going to come down to this one more season. Like, we've been saying that for a couple seasons now. But if you look beyond this season, or I guess it would be looking beyond next season. So that would be what, the 24-25 season. By the time the postseason rolls around, Crosby's going to be closer to 38 than he will be 37. Like, are you really expecting him to captain the Penguins to a cup at that point? So I'm looking at a guy maybe like Orlov. I feel like you could probably get him at a reasonable cap hit, especially if you told him, like, yeah, you're going to come play, like, in our top four, mainly with Chris Letang. You're going to have a prominent role here and may help us make another push for a cup. That being said, there's not a whole lot else out there that really excites me all that much, or is like, ooh, like, this is a guy the Penguins need to go get. But again, it all goes back to what the heck is happening in goal, because it's really hard to start diving into all that without knowing.
Yeah, Orlov, you imagine he's not going to go back to Boston just because of the cap issues. The only reason he's fitting in now, like, Washington retains salary. In that, yeah, he's definitely the top left D available. Like, Shane Goss is bear. Oscar Klefbom, Brian Dumoulin is among the top lefties available. Jake Gardner, it's and Ryan Graves. It's pretty bleak. I don't know what else you would really want. A goalie and a lefty, I think, is your number one priority, like 1A, 1B. As far as the skater goes, I don't think that they're going to have the cap to be big players with any of these guys. I think Zucker's going to come back. We can talk about Zucker in this segment too, but Zucker, he was pretty adamant that he wants to be here. He was like, I don't know if you were there, if you were in on him on Clean Up Day, but he was very forceful about that he doesn't want to go anywhere else. So you might be able to get him back at a hometown discount. And if it's not him, then I don't know who else out there could replace him at a similar cap hit and play in your top six.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. Like, I'm still on the fence with Zucker and, like, have some pretty strict parameters about, like, how I would want to bring him back. But at the same time, I'm fully willing to recognize that, like, I have no idea how the heck they're going to replace the character and intangibles he brings to the table if he doesn't end up coming back.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this on the 24/7 after cleanout day, but, you know, people talk about, like, injuries as a concern with him. I'm not really worried about that, because if you look back, you know, two seasons ago when he couldn't stay healthy, it wasn't like, oh, he just had all these different things popping up. It was one thing the entire season. He started missing practices that year back in, like, early December. Maintenance days, and then he finally started missing time, and then that's when he started coming in and out of the lineup. But it was that same core muscle thing the entire season, and because he didn't have time to heal during the season, and then, you know, he has a full off season, gets better, and then it's not a problem at all this year. So I'm not worried about that. If you have to give him more term to keep the cap it down, then do it. I don't think it matters. I think a deal similar to, like, what Rust has, where like, Russ got a 6-year deal, zero trade protection at all the last 3 years, because you figure the window is going to be closed by then, and then you just move on from him. That's something reasonable for Zucker.
Yeah, I was talking with the around the 412 guys and Jesse Marshall the other night, and we were talking about Zucker. Tyler specifically, he was talking about, like, yeah, I wouldn't go over, like, 3 or 4 years on him. I'm with you. I don't necessarily care about the term as much, but if they can do something like Russ deal where they get the AAV, like, I think I said, I probably wouldn't want to go, like, over 5 is my cap, but, you know, if they can get him, like, around that or anything below, I would feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah. We'll wrap it up here. We're going to be talking about the phase, obviously, probably every week, every other week, but, It'll be a little easier when we have some clarity as to what kind of money they're going to have and who's going to be making those decisions. So stay with us. We're going to be talking about more off-season decisions in the next two segments. All right, and we're back. The Penguins have only ever bought out one player. Ever. And it's Jack Johnson, and they're still paying for it. $1.9 million towards the cap this season. It goes down to just over $900,000 the next three seasons. Buyout implications are steep. How much you pay out of the remaining contract depends on how old the player is. 26 years old is the cutoff for that. And it's paid out over double the length of the contract remaining. So if a player has 2 years left on his deal, you're paying the buyout out over 4 years. So that's how that all works. Do the Penguins have any good buyout candidates this year? I don't know. We're going to look at a couple of the options. It's never a great idea. Like the penalties are steep. A buyout is always the last resort. Ideally, you want to trade a player first, even if you have to retain like 50% salary, just because then you're paying for it for half the time. So I have four players we can talk about. The first one, we have to mention Jeff Carter. Everyone always says buyout Jeff Carter. The thing about Jeff Carter is he's on a 35-plus contract. 35-plus.
We still have to talk about this. Like, we still are at a point where we have to say that the Penguins are stuck with Jeff Carter's cap hit.
We're going to rename the podcast Jeff Carter's 35-plus contract. Maybe I'll just name the episode that. Taylor and Danny talk about Jeff Carter's 35-plus contract. No, but it is every week because it can't get into people's heads. 35-plus contract, that's because he signed it after 35 years old. Now, not everyone who signs a multi-year deal after 35-plus years old is on a 35-plus contract. The contract has to either have signing bonuses beyond year one or be front-loaded. Ron Hextall, in all his wisdom, front-loaded Jeff Carter's contract to give him that protection. So Jeff Carter, that means his cap hit cannot be reduced by sending him down to the minors, which Jeff Carter, full no movement clause, that's not happening anyway, or contract termination or buyout or early retirement. So they're stuck with the cap hit no matter what. That doesn't mean you can't buy him out. You would just be paying him the $3.125 million cap hit to go away.
And judging by the fact that they refused to take him out of the lineup the entire season, there's no chance that they're going to do that to him now.
No. It would be one thing if they actually thought that he was an issue and they were sitting him. Again, this is going to be the GM's call, but I feel like they're not going to pay. It doesn't free up any cap space. It would just be freeing up a roster spot. That's not happening. Let's stop talking about it. Three guys who might make a little bit of sense. Jan Ruda. Before we get to Jan Ruda, so we're recording this Thursday. He underwent surgery this week. The Penguins just announced that today. Core muscle surgery, 8 to 10 weeks recovery, so he'll be should be fine for the start of training camp.
That explains why we got Dmitry Kulikov playing on his offside in the finale, because I wrote a column earlier this week and one of my bullets was like, this still remains pretty bizarre to me. So it makes a little more sense now.
Yeah, and Ruda, he had two injuries second half of the season. The first was upper body injury. That's probably what this was, and it had him out for about a month, and he came back, played about a month, and then he was out for about another month with a lower body injury. That one was, though, after the game where he took the puck to the knee, so that might be something different. So the core muscle thing might date back to, I think that was like mid-late January. Regardless, is he a buyout candidate? We've talked before, like when you're talking about guys who might make sense to trade, about how he's really a luxury they can't afford on the third pairing at $2.75 million. But does he make sense as a buyout candidate? So the way the penalties work, it's not the same every year. There's like a formula, and then there's a formula like on top of the formula. Cap friendly is a calculator. You don't have to do any math yourself. So because he has 2 years left, it would be, four years of penalties. And the savings, I don't think, are really worth it. So right now it's $2.75 million cap hit. His cap hit over the next 2 years would be just over $1 million. And then the last 2 years would be $830,000. So for these next 2 years, that'd be saving you $1.6 million. I don't think that's worth it.
No, I wouldn't do that at all. I mean, I agree. Like, I think he's an unnecessary luxury, but like his cap hit is not that bad. Like, when you have him out there, you look and you're like, yes, okay, the Penguins could probably be getting similar value from like a Mark Friedman or Chad Ruweedle at a much lower cap hit. But at the same time as that, I still get the sense that Ruda has like this perceived value as like a multiple cup winning veteran that like plays this, like all the things that enticed Hextall about him last offseason. Like, I feel like there are still like that perception is at least like somewhat prevalent around the league. So if they were even considering buying him out, I would first be looking at any sort of trade options, because I don't think that they should necessarily make their bed and have them absolutely have him in their plans heading into next season if they don't have to.
Yeah. And again, you look at the savings, only like 1.6 million. When you figure half of that, if you want to replace him with like a Friedman, he'd be taking up about half of that. You'd only be freeing up really like 800,000 to use elsewhere. Ruda, no. Jeff Petrie is another name I see people throw out as like, buy out this guy, just because he is their highest paid defenseman right now. Him, it would be difficult to trade if they wanted to do that to free up cap space, just because he does have a 15 team no trade list. And if you look at the teams that have ample cap space for him, he could put those on as no trade, let's not go anywhere. And I don't think Jeff Petrie would want to go anywhere, just because you look at his situation in Montreal, being far away from like his family in Michigan. That was one of the things he said he liked about coming to Pittsburgh, is how close they are to his he is now to his family in Michigan. So I don't think Petrie wants to go anywhere. After this season, he has 2 years left on his contract. That carries a 6.25 million cap hit. You look at the buyout. So again, because 2 years, it would be 4 years. And the cap hit next year would be 3 million, which means savings would be 3.25. The cap hit 24-25 would be 4.5 million, which means savings in that year would be 1.75. And then in the last 2 years, you would have a 1.125 million penalty. I mean, if you're this is the one that would get you the most savings for next year, just over 3 million, but it's just still one that's just very steep.
Yeah, my thing with it is like, okay, yeah, Petrie. The other thing too, I think Petrie did play pretty poorly in my eyes, like the last like month and a half or so of the season, maybe 2 months of the season, which probably had a little bit of something to do after coming back from that upper body injury he had. And then he had the concussion as well there down the stretch. But I think the thing about Petrie is that he kind of, despite mostly playing well for a second pairing role, maybe being slightly overpaid, I think just at this stage of his career, some of his weaknesses were also just kind of stood out, like in the mess of that this Penguins team was. Like, some of the things I noticed about Petrie, like there were certain times where he tried to like do too much behind his own net on the breakout, and he just like would do it way too slowly or just not get the puck off his stick quick enough. And then all of a sudden, like there's a flurry around the net and the puck's in the back of the net or something like that. So I think it was maybe a little bit of that, like, I don't know what the term is, but like this, whatever the term is for stuff that Letang does, that like makes people go crazy and makes them think that like he's actually not a good player because he turned the puck over. Mm-hmm. So whatever that like itis is, I think that maybe his issues have been a little bit overblown. But then you go and look, it's like, okay, you're saving a little over 3 million. So what second pairing right-handed defenseman are you going out and finding for that low $3 million value that's going to be better than Petrie? Well, you're not going to. So I think the conversation and discussion just has to end right there.
Yeah. Saving the best for last. This is the one that probably makes the most sense. Mikael Granlund. He has 2 years left on his contract that carries a $5 million cap hit. And okay, so again, 2 years, it would be a 4-year buyout. His cap hit next year would only be $830,000, which means next year you'd be getting a $4.1 million savings. Cap hit the year after that would be 1.8. You'd be getting a $3.1 million savings in that year. And then you'd have 1.8 in the last two. So just a penalty in those last 2 years. This is the one that makes the most sense out of all of them. Just if you look at the savings in these next 2 years, I think that would be worth it. And then the $1.8 million in the last two, after his contract would have expired if you didn't buy him out. Figure the window's going to be closed by then. Is it going to matter? Probably not. I think this one makes sense. If a new GM comes in, would they be willing to make that decision after just what? It's like 21 games, I think he played. It was a pretty short sample size to make this big of a call over, but I think if you look at the savings, it makes sense.
Well, I think the new GM should hope that Ron Hextall has a new GM job by the time they have to make that decision. So hopefully they can just get Hextall to pay like a second round pick for Granlund and they don't have to worry about it. But yeah, I'm with you. Like I think it makes complete sense, especially we're talking about their competitive window here. And like I keep saying, like, yes, so like we got one more year on the window. We got one more year on the window. But you know, realistically, it isn't going to go on forever. And you look, that $4 million could be huge for them this coming season, especially if they figure out what's going on in goal. That could be absolutely huge for them. But I think the bigger thing is that there's kind of like a slippery slope of going into next season with Granlund, because like even Sullivan kind of just tried to convince himself these things about Granlund, because like he had him and he wasn't going anywhere. So like all of a sudden you see Sullivan like succumbing to the, oh yeah, he's got this positional versatility and we can use him on all three positions and we can use him up and down the lineup. It's like, yeah, you can do that with Brock McGinn too, if you really want to. You can do that with anybody, but you don't want to do that with bad players. And what I will say about Granlund specifically, the trade stunk. He stunk. The Penguins, and one of the concerns I had about his game when he came over was his defensive play. Like the film on his defensive play was not good. The metrics and like isolated impacts on his defensive play were even worse. With that being said, the Penguins at least performed pretty well defensively with him on the ice in terms of expected goals against and goals against. But then you look at like his history as a defensive play driver and it's just non-existent. And then you consider the fact that he scored one goal in those 20 games and it came in garbage time. It's like you just cannot go into next season paying that guy that much.
Yeah, I would do it. And to your point, I mean, I asked him about his own play, just how he would assess his own play. It was like, you know, maybe I think it was the last practice of the season. I think I talked to him about this because like you look at his production in the past, he was never much of a goal scorer. He was always more of a playmaker. But even he wasn't getting like the assists here either. I think finished with four or five.
Yeah, four in this.
Yeah, in those 21 games. So I asked him just about, you know, how he thinks his time. And he was putting up the points in Nashville, but he was also playing in a top six role, better players. But I asked him how he thinks his time here is gone. And great reviews from Mikhail Granlund about his own time here. He said, like, he's like, you have to know, like, I'm playing a role, more of a defensive role. He talked about his penalty killing. He said he felt great with the way he's played here. He said obviously he would like to help the team more in other ways, like putting up points, but it's not everything and you're playing a role.
Respectfully, Mikhail, you're getting paid $5 million a season. You're not like a $750,000 depth signing. When you're making that kind of much, like when you're making that much money, yes, I'm sure you were given a very specific role by the coaching staff, but your role is to not just, okay, I took care of my defense. Like one goal in 20 games is fine. That's just absurd to me. Like,
yeah.
I get the rationalization from him. I don't necessarily expect him to come out and be like, oh yeah, I stunk. And like, I need to start putting up more points or whatever it was. But at the same time, it's like, are we just going to ignore the fact that you were paid very, very handsomely for being on the penalty kill? Like,
yeah. And again, you talk about like he can play all, you know, positions, but they didn't even really do that. They had him at center for like 2-3 games. I think
that's my thing with it, is like they put him at center. This is the guy they went out and got that was supposed to help him get over the edge into the postseason and everything. They try him out at center for a handful of games and they're like, oh no, not anymore. Like, holy crap.
Well, and because he was playing mostly wing in Nashville. He did play a little bit of center in Nashville this season. I mean, he played center a lot earlier in his career. His faceoff
stayed a little better.
Yeah, his faceoff percentage in Nashville this year before the trade was like 42%. Not great. And then he came over, and in those couple games he played center, it was like either he went like 12-0 or like 12-1 in one game. Like it was like one of the best faceoff performances in a single game by like a center in like Penguins franchise history. It was like number two. But then he has others where he's like 2-9. So, but it evened out around 50%. I remember after that game where, you know, he had that really good, faceoff performance. Sullivan was asked, like, you know, if Granlund keeps this up, could you see him being the guy you send out there in like key faceoffs? And like Sullivan was like, yeah, you know, maybe we'll see. You know, he didn't commit one way or another, but just said, you know, they like the way Granlund's progressing, and maybe he could get a bigger role. The question was code for like, could he take Jeff Carter's spot? That's not happening. So I don't know where he fits in at center. So that's enough on that. Too bad, because he's a nice guy to talk to.
Yeah, I feel bad that he's kind of got yes, he's kind of stunk, but it's not his fault that Hextall traded a second round pick.
Yeah, Granlund. I had two Granlund jerseys in high school. I had his Minnesota jersey and I had his Team Finland jersey. So, yeah, but probably shouldn't be here anymore. We're going to wrap it up for this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Alex Nylander. So stay with us for that. All right, and we are back. One of the decisions the Penguins have to make this offseason, whenever they get a GM, Alex Nylander, he's an RFA. You have to assume he's going to be resigned. But another decision is just where he fits next year. Is it going to be in Pittsburgh? Is it going to be in Wilkes-Barre? He would have to clear waivers to go down to Wilkes-Barre next season. I think we're in agreement that he's earned a spot on the NHL roster. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I believe that, yes, he's 25 years old now. He's still an unproven commodity after being a very, very high draft choice. But with that being said, as we've discussed in the show already, the Penguins, at some point throughout their lineup, to address their depth, they're going to have to try and squeeze some value out of bargain bin contracts, which means finding or utilizing guys who probably aren't all that great, but at least have some upside that maybe they can reach another gear on a somewhat consistent level, or maybe over short stretches or flashes in a pan where they can like really exceed the dollar amount that you're paying them. And that's exactly what I see in Nylander right now. I don't love basing a whole lot of this off of the 50 points in 55 games he had in Wilkes-Barre, but that obviously stands out because he only had the 9 games with the Penguins, and he only scored one goal and had an assist in those 9 games. But when I, after the season ended, today that I wrote a Drive to the Net column on Nylander and why I think that he has earned himself a spot in the lineup. And it basically boiled down to, despite the fact that he only had those 2 points in 9 games, we know that he has the puck skills. We know that he has the offensive instincts that over time, and once he's been given the opportunity to kind of settle into things, that the production should come around. It's always been a question of, can his off-puck play, specifically his work in the defensive zone and the pace of play, and his processing power and his decision-making, can all of those things kind of come together to make his offensive skills matter? Well, when I was going back and watching film on Nylander in each of the 9 games he played up in the NHL, I was floored at the details in his off-puck play. And a lot of the stuff that he was doing is the kind of things that Mike Sullivan requires from players in his bottom six. Now, Nylander's not necessarily out there playing like Brandon Tanev and running guys through the wall and skating with his tongue out and going crazy bug eyes, all that kind of stuff. But there were points in time where Nylander was like a one-man wrecking crew on the forecheck. He was extremely, extremely sound in the defensive zone, and he seemed to be reading the game pretty well. So all of a sudden you see all these things, and you're like, okay, he seems to be taking care of business in that department. And we know the fact that he has that offensive pedigree. That all should come together at some point. And I can't help but think the fact that he was up and down and up and down and back from Pittsburgh and back from Wilkes-Barre so many times, like that's got to affect your performance somewhat, right? And then you still look and it's like, yeah, okay, he didn't really have the production, but then you see how the Penguins performed when he was on the ice. Well, they performed extremely well. They were plus one in goals. I think they were up 5-4 on the opposition during his 5-on-5 ice time. But on top of that, they controlled over 60% of the shot attempts, shots on goal, expected goals, right? And that very small sample here, but it's important when you're looking at a player like that, it's like he's not crushing you when he's out there. Well, that's a really good thing, because that was basically what the concern was about this player and this guy's impact. So my thought process is, if you can get him back, and obviously because he is a restricted free agent, if they want him back, they can have him back. But if you can get him back on a deal that's similar to the 2-year, $1.65 million deal that Joseph signed last offseason, which carries like an $885,000 cap hit, if you can get him on a deal that's similar to that or maybe slightly richer, I don't see how you don't do that and bring him back, because I think there's a very real possibility that he could flourish in a third line role on the right wing with the capability of jumping up top six in spot duty. And at worst, he's probably at least sufficient depth if you're not going to have him in the lineup. That's my rant.
Agree with all of it. I mean, I watched him a lot in Wilkes-Barre. I watched him a lot, you know, after the trade last season too. I remember I talked to him, you know, maybe right after the trade, because when he came in, he had a reputation for just not caring about his play away from the puck, like not putting in effort. It wasn't that he's bad at it. It was that he wasn't trying. It sounded like he was like Daniel Sprong 2.0, at least Daniel Sprong, the version of Daniel Sprong we saw here. But, you know, I talked to him about that, you know, why he has that kind of reputation. And he's like, I don't know why, you know, I have that rep. He's like, I understand the play away from the puck, but even like that season you watched it, he wasn't like a liability or anything, wasn't that, but you could tell like the details weren't there, and he really wasn't like playing physical. But then this season in Wilkes-Barre, it was a big improvement for him, and especially with the physical play. And I remember I talked to JD Forrest, this was maybe like November, December, about just his play away from the puck, and JD, you know, point out, he said he thinks like this season especially he's made a lot of improvements, but especially the physical play. The line he had was like, he's had more hits in the last month than he had, you know, all last season combined in the AHL, and then that carried over to the NHL too. So I wish we would have seen him more in the top six. Zucker and Malkin, he got a couple games up there. I guess
I wasn't surprised, but I'm with you. Like, I wish he would have been given a little bit of a longer leash, because like I just talked about, it's not like he was out there hurting the team. I think it was just one of those stretches where like the puck wasn't, when I was going through, like when he was playing with Zucker and Malkin, they were creating chances. It's like the puck just didn't go in a whole lot for him. So yeah. It was just a little bizarre. Like I'm not necessarily like on the side of the fence where people are like, oh, like Sullivan just hates the young guys and refuses to play the young guys. But like on the other side of the fence, it's like, okay, yeah, like they definitely have a much shorter leash than a lot of guys who are clearly not good.
Yeah. At least like the last game of the regular season, you and I were both talking about that in Columbus. Like, this game doesn't mean anything. Of course they're going into it like it's a meaningful game anyway. They're trying to win. They didn't, but like that, you can't like experiment a little in that game. You can't put Nylander on Malkin's wing for that game.
The fact that they went out there with Gensel, Crosby, Rust for most of that game, Why? Like you got thousands of minutes worth of data on the Gensel Crosby Russ night. God forbid we get 12 minutes on what Zucker and Raquel might do on Crosby's wing.
Yeah, they're trying to win, but it's basically a preseason game. It's basically exhibition. You're playing against a team that basically has an exhibition lineup. It's not like you're playing the Cleveland Monsters. So too bad. I'd imagine he gets re-signed. He is arbitration eligible. I don't think that he doesn't have much of a sample size this season to where I think that would make a difference. I don't think he'd file. I think this is something that whenever they do get a GM in, they get done early. So we'll see how that plays out. I'd like to see him at the NHL a little bit next year. Maybe the preseason next year we get to see him play with Evgeny Malkin or someone in the top six. It'll be rust again up there. that's it for this week. We're going to wrap it up. I think these episodes over the off season are going to be shorter. We were going like an hour the last couple episodes. Thankfully, far less to talk about over this summer, so we're going to keep these a little shorter. Thanks again for joining us. We drop episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google. We're also on YouTube if you don't watch it. We're on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Penguins channel, the All Penguins YouTube channel. So check us out there, and we hope you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening.